Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Banca Sistema first half 2018 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Gianluca Garbi, Chief Executive Officer of Banca Sistema. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon to everybody. I'm here, as usual, with Ilaria Bennati, our CFO, and Carlo Di Piero, our IR Director. This is our first semester after we present the three-year business plan. Let me sum up, looking at the slide in page 2, the first half result. Factoring turnover is up 29% on a year-on-year basis, equal to 1,136,000,000. We have registered again a good contribution on the factoring turnover from agreement with the banks that represent 31% on the first half of 2018. The CQ outstanding reached 571,000,000, up 60% on a year-on-year basis. The adjusted interest income margin is stable on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Net interest income is equal to 32.6 million, which is up 9% on a year-on-year basis and higher also on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Cost of funding has remained stable both on a year-on-year basis as well as on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Total income equal to 40.9 million, which is up 16% on a year-on-year basis, driven by last 12 months of turnover in both core businesses. The total operating costs are up 8% on a year-on-year basis. The cost of risk is 29 basis points, mostly driven by the factoring business. Net income reached 11.2 million, which is up 12% on a year-on-year basis and also higher on a quarter-on-quarter basis, with the corresponding to a return on average equity of around 16%, with the remaining target for year-end in line with what we approved on the three-year business plan. We have also recently started that we announced a distribution of a term deposit through a new venture with a company called Deposit Solution, which add on to the existing distribution channel. This distribution is aim to raise deposit from mainly Germany, but we're also looking at expanding the activity in Spain and Austria. The Core Tier 1 ratio and total capital ratio are respectively 11% and 14.1%, which are both well above the regulatory capital and also slightly above also our expectation. Moving to the next slide number 3. Both factoring and CQ have registered a strong increase on a year-on-year basis in terms of outstanding as well as the turnover. And in terms of outstanding is plus 33% and plus 60%. Our growth in factoring is due to the increase of turnover. And as explained during the last conference call, when we announced the three-year business plan, tax receivable will have been one of the main drivers of the growth. And this result confirm our view in that respect. Thanks to the first half 2018 growth, these receivable have reached 25% of the total outstanding, while during the same period of last year, the tax receivable were 12%. Still referring to factoring, the market environment has not changed. Payment delay are consistent with our expectation of the average collection date for factoring receivable. So now let me give the floor to Ilaria that will move from slide number 4.
Good afternoon to everybody. I'm slide number 4, as Gianluca mentioned. We provide here a few comments on the main balance sheet figures. Total assets stand at 3 billion and have increased 31% versus 2017 year end. In particular, factoring receivables at 1.5 billion are up 16% versus year end, thanks to the solid turnover origination registered in the first half. Secured loans stand at 571 million, up again versus year end. Govies portfolio equals almost 800 million and have overall increased by 436 million versus year end. The position in Italian government bonds classified as held to sell amounts to only 100 million and has a residual duration of less than 12 months. Due to banks is up mainly for higher interbanking component, while due to customers increase is driven by higher reports related to the increase in the Govies portfolio and higher term deposits. Current accounts are stable versus 2017 year end. We now move to discuss the P&L figures on page 5. Just a couple of comments on the P&L table. Interest income is up 14%, but when evaluating the factoring contribution to P&L, we should also consider the factoring commission component, which is indeed up 53% versus last year. Interest expenses are up 29% year on year, mainly due to the write-off of the TLTRO sub-zero interest rate benefit occurred in Q1 this year, and also due to the impact of the bond issued in Q4 last year. As a result, total income equals 40.9 million and is up 16% year on year. Net impairment on loans is in line with expectations, while last year's figure was driven by the release on a few positions. Overall, the 11.2 million net income for the first half represents a 12% increase compared to the same period last year. Looking now at page 6, we comment here in more details a few P&L items. Both factoring and CQ businesses contributed to the strong first half growth. Looking at the interest income table, factoring still represents 75% of the 44.7 million interest income. Adjusted interest income margin stands at 450 basis points compared to the 540 basis points in first half 2017 and to 430 basis points in Q1 2018. The adjusted interest income margin, including factoring commission, stands at 520 basis points. The KPI target that we set in the 3-year strategic plan envisage a range between 4 and 4.5% for the adjusted interest income margin and 4.4 to 4.9% for the margin including commissions. So today's figures stand at the top end of the range for the interest income margin and even above the top end of the range for the margin including commissions. Again, on profitability, we see adjusted interest income margin has decreased year on year, with the decrease being mainly driven by a higher weight of CQ on total stock and by a slightly lower factoring profitability. The diminished factoring profitability is due to a higher weight of tax receivables on the portfolio mix. Indeed, as we mentioned a few times already, tax receivables have a lower yield than commercial ones, but on the other hand, they carry zero RWA consumption. To move to the bottom tables, we focus on a few LPIs-related figures. We continue to see a strong contribution of LPIs to deferred profitability. The stock of LPIs generated by assets in legal action stands at 100 million versus the 92 million at year-end. The accumulated amount recognized in P&L since June 2016 is now 36.6 million. Interest income of LPIs from legal action in first half equals 10.7 million, and represents 24% of total interest income. The accrual component, out of this, the accrual component is 7.3 million. The amount of total cash collected LPIs from legal action in first half equals 7.6 million, which confirms a solid trend in the collection activity. Indeed, the collection rates continue to be well above 80%. For the second quarter in a row, this is important for us to highlight, the total cash collected of LPIs are equal or even above the accrual component, and this concerns the dynamics well expected when we started to account for the LPIs on an accrual basis in June 2016. We now move on to slide 8, where we comment operating costs. Operating costs are in line with expectations. Personal expenses account for 46% of total costs, and this increase year on year is due to the increase in the number of headcounts. Increase in other operating costs is consistent with the growth of the business. Overall, cost income stands at 51% compared to the 54% at year end. We now move on to the next slide on funding, slide 8. Funding mix continues to be well balanced between wholesale and retail, with wholesale component at 57% and retail funding at 43%. Cost of funding, as we mentioned, is stable year on year, 0.9%. Term deposit stock is up quarter on quarter, year on year, and also vis-a-vis 2017 year end, and is well diversified in terms of duration buckets. Current account stock is up year on year and stable versus year end. Wholesale weight year on year increase is driven, it used to be 51% end of last year, is driven mainly by higher repos related to the Govies portfolio and by higher interbanking component and higher bond issues. To this respect, indeed, in addition to the senior bond issued in Q4 last year, we also issued a 90 million three-year senior bond in Q2 this year that refinanced the two-year bond redeemed in May 2018. We now move on to the next slide to discuss asset quality. Net bad loans represent 1.6% of total loans and is slightly lower quarter on quarter. Bad loans increase quarter on quarter is due to factoring, specifically consortium and municipalities under financial distress, and is particularly compensated by a decrease in UTP. Past dues is mainly attributed to factor receivables without recourse from public administration. We know this is considered normal for the sector and doesn't represent an issue in terms of credit quality, neither in terms of probability of collection. Cost of risk at 29 basis points is in line with expectations. Before moving to the next slide, I hand the floor back to Gianluca.
Okay, thank you. So I'm in, looking at slide number 10 very quickly. The Core Tier 1 ratio and total capital ratio, as I mentioned before, are above expectation and well above the minimum regulatory capital, which is 7.125% in 2018 for the Core Tier 1 ratio. The quarter-on-quarter ratio reduction was mainly driven by new business origination and partially also by the held-to-collect and sell reserve that has impacted the first half of the year of 18 basis points following the high volatility on Italian government bond market on the second half of 2018. Having said that, I conclude here the presentation and I leave the floor for any question.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Manuela Meroni of Banca IMI. Please go ahead, madam.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one is on the contribution of LPI to total interest. I'm wondering if you can give us a guidance on what you are expecting in terms of contribution for full year 2018. The second question is on the cost of risk. If I'm not wrong, during the first quarter conference call, you mentioned to expect a cost of risk in 2018 in line with the first quarter. That was, I think, 22 basis points. Now you are at 29, so I'm wondering if you can guide us between 25 and 20 and 30 basis points as a full year 2018 in terms of cost of risk. And third question concerning the benefit on TLTRO. You said in the first quarter presentation that you were still investigating on the possibility to get the benefit of minus 0.4%. I'm wondering if you are still investigating on or you have a final listing outcome on this issue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I will start with the last question and then leave the floor to Ilaria to answer to the other two. On the TLTRO, we end up to say that we would not be able to take the minus 40 basis point, so we consider TLTRO at 0%. That was most likely a something that was at the level of the ECB not being properly addressed in terms of the factoring business. So for this reason, the amount that we are taking in consideration is the 0% and no change on the upside going forward. I leave to Ilaria to the answer to the other two points.
Yes, the question related to the LPI contribution, the contribution of the LPI income to the income statement this year, this semester has been, as you mentioned, 10.7 million out of the 44.8 million of total interest. This represents 24% contribution. If we only consider interest deriving from factory business, this represents 32% of contribution. Looking forward, we believe the contribution of the LPI component is going to be higher, both in terms of total interest as well as in terms of factoring interest. The percentage could range between, say, 30% up to potentially 40% at the end of the three-year horizon in terms of contribution to the total interest. In terms of contribution to the factoring interest, the percentage could range between, say, 35% to close to 50% at plan end. In terms of cost of risk, I think we announced during the presentation of the three-year plan that we could envisage a cost of risk flat at around 30 basis points for the three-year period. So we would investigate the 22 basis points of Q1 and come back to you, although I recall cost of risk being stable during the last quarter.
Okay, the next question is from Christian Carrese of Intermonte. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I have a few questions. The first one is on the interest margin. We saw a decrease in the first half 2018 compared to first half 2017, still above the range you gave in the business plan. I was wondering, what do you think could be the evolution of the spread in the coming quarters? Do you see still some margin pressure, or do you think that there could be a stabilization? The second question is on the split payment. The government announced some the willingness to change some rules on the split payment. If you can give us your thoughts on that. The third question is on capital. There was a decrease in Common Equity Tier 1 ratio in the quarter due to risk-weighted assets increase, mainly related to credit risk. I was wondering if you want to go ahead with the securitization of CQS and CQP to regain some some capital from that, and still if you can give us an update on the possibility of a reform for the CQS and CQP weight that should be done by year end. And finally, on shareholder structure, the PISA Foundation didn't exit the shareholders pact. If you can tell us what you think they will be, what will the foundation will do with still keeping the shares, or any changes on the investment. Thank you.
So I'll take the first question on margins. As you correctly pointed out, the adjusted net interest income margin for the first half stands at 4.5%, while we have communicated the range between 4% and 4.5% for the plan horizon. So this number actually is close to the, actually at the top end of the range. The adjusted net interest income margin stands at 5.2%, which is even outside the range that we communicated with the 3-year business plan, which was indeed 4.4 to 4.9 basis points. The results are even better if we only look at the quarterly numbers. So for the quarter, we have adjusted net interest income margin at 4.8%. This is outside the range that communicated, and the adjusted net interest income margin, including commissions, was 5.6%. So even above the 5.2% that we recorded for the semester. So this clearly shows that the compression that we've seen in yields in the past has somehow stopped. So to this respect, price yields for commercial receivables, we have noticed that price yields for commercial receivables have been stable in Q1 and Q2, and also versus 2017. So the compression in yields that we have witnessed during the course of 2016 has finished, and actually since the end of 2016, price yields have remained somehow stable. So the slight drop that overall we see in the factoring margins, as you mentioned many times, is only due to a higher component of the tax receivables within the portfolio mix. So clearly the adjusted net interest income margin that we communicated are on a consolidated basis, so not only for factoring, and in terms of factoring they are not only related to commercial receivables. If we want to extrapolate the commercial receivables business out of the overall portfolio, we can clearly say that the compression in yields is no longer in place. In terms of outlook for the future, we believe we can confirm the range that we have communicated a couple of months ago during the business plan presentation.
Okay, thank you. So in terms of split payment, during the debate of particularly the beginning of the new government, there were statements about the deletion of the split payment in Italy. After, as far as I saw, after some consideration about the coverage in terms of capability of being able to actually cancel the split payment, the government decided to take away the split payment only on professional, so i.e. individual. Just to give you the idea, the split payment is worth 15 billion. The decision was to take away only on professional, and this is part of the so-called Decreto Dignità, and it's worth 35 million. So that was the only balance sheet availability that the government found in terms of split payment. The announcement by politicians was that the split payment has been abolished, without specifying the small detail that was abolished only on something that is a very minor part of the of the potential player involved in split payment. So we continue not to see how the government will be able to find 15 billion in the balance sheet to abolish the split payment. In terms of Core Tier 1, we continue the securitization because the securitization allows us to reduce the cost of funding, but the securitization is not for sale, so we do not intend to sell the securitization. Because we do continue to expect the approval of a reduction of RWA, even more now than in the past. Now the change has been approved by the Parliament, is part now the process is that all the amendments of the CRR are discussed at the level of what is called trialogue, which is the three party composed by the Commission, the Parliament, and the European Council. And as far as we saw, while for other matter like mortgages or other issue, there are various positions that are expressed by the different country. So they need to negotiate the various country to find a compromise. On the item about the reduction of RWA on CQS, there's only one position, so which is the one expressed approved by the European Parliament, which introduced the reduction to 35% of RWA. There is no other opposition to this amendment. So for this reason, we remain optimistic to the fact that this change will be passed. And this is also the additional reason why we will keep the securitization and the CQS on our balance sheet in order to fully benefit from this change of regulation that will have an impact of 150 basis points in terms of Core Tier 1. In terms of the last question about the...
Sorry, if I may, how many loans are eligible for the securitization as of today?
Yes, the vast majority of the receivable are eligible for the securitization. There are some criteria of eligibility. So part of the receivable that are not eligible will become eligible at the first payment date of the loan. So even the ones that are not eligible at the acquisition date, they will become eligible in a matter of a couple of months for the securitization. So yes, they are...
You are referring to CQS, CQP?
Yes, CQS, CQP, yes, both.
So the amount is more or less...
Today we have a 571 million. The amount in the securitization is slightly lower because some of the receivable are not yet eligible but will become eligible.
Yeah.
And also because we don't transfer the receivable into the securitization on a daily basis, but we do it, let's say, every couple of months when we reach a sizable amount, then we transfer the receivable in the securitization. The reason why we wait is simply because there is a cost, legal cost, operational cost, every time that we transfer receivable into the securitization. So in order to minimize this fixed cost, we only transfer into the securitization when we have enough size that is worth to be transferred in the securitization.
And they are currently weighted at around 70%?
It's likely, yes, about 70%, because there are some on the CQP in particular, we are able to take the advantage in case the insurance is rated, so we can have a slightly reduction using the look-through with the rating of the insurance. So also the 35% will be slightly below 35, because this look-through will apply also in case the RWA will be reduced in general. Your last question about the shareholder structure, clearly I can only comment about the fact that 38% of the capital remain in the hands of the shareholder with the pact. As far as I know, the Foundation of Pisa hasn't sell any of their shares. And in terms of what they intend to do for the future, I think that this is a question more for them rather than for us. We haven't received any communication about any willingness to keep or to sell their participation, also because we are not, as a company, the one that should be informed or not about their decision. Okay.
Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Once again, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is from Mr. Andrew Mitchell of Edison. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Just a quick one on the tax receivables, where that's growing as you hoped strongly. I just wondered, in terms of pricing, whether that's also covered by your earlier comment that that's as expected, or whether that opportunity has drawn in more aggressive bidding.
Sorry, can you say that again?
I just wondered whether pricing in the tax receivables area has come under pressure, or whether it's covered by a similar comment to the one you made on factoring in general, that pressure is not particularly evident at the moment.
No, actually, pressure is not particularly evident within the tax receivable space. These assets carry a lower yield. They also carry, as we said, zero RWA consumption, and they carry much smaller collection cost. So all in all, we believe that the yield related to these assets is adequate to our risk appetite framework. We also have to mention that the funding period, so the duration related to these assets, is longer than the duration related to commercial receivables. So overall, the contribution to the P&L on an annual basis is not that far away from the one of the commercial ones.
Thanks very much.
Mr. Garbi, there are no questions registered at this time, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to everybody. Have a happy summer holiday for the one that are taking holidays. And we will have a new call for the next quarter results. Thank you again.